Welcome to the Anthropology in Business podcast, where you'll learn about the many ways anthropology is applied in business and why business anthropology is one of the most effective lenses for making sense of organizations and consumers. Through conversations with leading anthropologists working in advertising, marketing, consumer behavior, organizational culture, user experience, and many other roles, you'll learn firsthand what it means to do business anthropology and how the work differs from academic anthropology. We'll discuss issues like the pace and depth of research in business, our visibility and influence as practitioners, and what we can do to build our brand. We will also focus on the value and impact of our research in business so that we can help business leaders understand why they should be hiring anthropologists. I'm your host, Matt Arts, a business anthropologist specializing in design anthropology and working at the intersection of product management, user experience, and business strategy. Let's get started. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Anthropology and Business Podcast. I'm Matt Arts. I'm here today with Timothy Malafite. Tim is a clinical professor of marketing at the Gabelli School of Business at Fordham University and previously held numerous executive positions in advertising. We talked about all of those on our previous episode, which I'll link to in the show notes. Also the author of now 6 books, and today we'll be talking about the latest book, which is Business Anthropology, The Basics. I'll hold it up for those who might eventually see this video one day. And great book. It's definitely going to become the go-to book for business anthropology. So Tim, thanks for joining again. Would you mind just sort of telling me a little bit, you know, since we last spoke, in which, you know, we discussed your whole career, but since then, you know, has anything changed for you? And like, you know, what kind of brought you to wanting to write this book?
Well, first, thanks for having me on, Matt. It's always great to see you. And what kind of inspired me, my students very much inspired me with what's going on. But all of that's going on, the changes in the world, the greater need for anthropology and the greater need for anthropology to be a public voice. I talk about that in the book. Anthropology really has the resources for that to be a clarion speaker for all the issues going on. And how it's really useful for helping to solve problems. More and more we have these wicked problems and issues that come up in business and in society and in politics and so forth. And I think anthropology is just so well addressed for this. And, you know, I'm not the first to say this. This has been spoken about a lot, but I think there's just such value in that. So I really wanted to get the word out and how business anthropology can be used so generally to help solve problems. I think that's really what makes it different from academic anthropology is that this interventionist perspective that anthropologists can help make change, not just critique culture and criticize it, but actually do things and be part of that. And that's really what one of my big hopes is with this book is to launch, get students excited, get faculty excited in using this and use this as a way to see the tremendous benefits of an anthropology background. If you're not going to teach it, how are you going to use it in industry and government and so forth?
Yeah, great. And, you know, I want to pick up on one point there because obviously it's a point of contention within anthropology, you know, this sort of debate versus, say, critique versus intervention. And obviously, you know, we know that we're in the same boat where we're both in support of intervention, but that also doesn't, it's not a and, you know, it's not an or, it's an and, right? So like we critique to understand, right? But then what is the next step? And you're very clear about that in the book, you know, it's very balanced in that way, but it really, I think the question is always for me, what's next? Like, so we understand it, what do we do about it? And I think you addressed that really well. So appreciate, you know, the sentiment around that. Now, you mentioned students. Obviously, you teach in a business program. You teach anthropology in a business program. And so you have the opportunity to influence, you know, business, the future business leaders about anthropology. But who were you really writing this for? You know, were you thinking anthropology students? Were you also thinking business students? Was it broader than that?
Well, thank you. Both actually are, you know, a number of audiences here. You know, I've been now at Fordham 12 years teaching, and I'm the anthropologist here, the only anthropologist. And we have now, you know, the Fordham is very open about this. We have courses now that teach business anthropology, cross-cultural consumer insights that I bring in anthropological approaches. So students are being exposed to anthropology concepts and the idea of reflexivity. You know, what is your, how are you impacting the role of others and what you're doing? The idea of emic versus edic, the idea of holism is just so critical in anthropological thinking, taking a holistic view. Your business tends to be very linear, process focused. What was that Zuckerberg said, break things and then, you know, move on. No, anthropology is always looking at what are the repercussions of this. And more business schools are teaching this kind of purpose-driven business with purpose. How can you benefit the shareholders? We now have B corporations and so forth that look at how businesses can give back and be a force for good in society. So anthropology is just right for that. And I got this from working with my students. That was one of the impetuses for writing the book. And it's also it's encouraging students outside of anthropology to learn about how anthropology can be effective, but also for anthropology students themselves at whatever level to see the uses and the good that anthropology can do beyond teaching. Elizabeth Bridey is doing a great job in her career readiness program, showing how teaching most anthropologists, we realize, will not be teaching anthropology. So, you know, what are the ways that they can learn to, apply anthropology in government like you do, in private sector or in public sector work, and how anthropology can really be a force for good for this. So, I do take a stand, and I, as you just mentioned before, take this interventionist role, how we anthropologists can get involved beyond just critiquing. So it is for anthropology students, for faculty who want to teach anthropology with practical results, and for non-anthropologists who are interested in what they can do, how anthropology can inform government work, business work, private sector work, in user experience, in marketing and design and advertising, in the work with AI, with big data and so forth. All of these are applications where anthropologists are working. And this really has a huge benefit. It's just showing, again, this book is it was a basic book. Rutledge came to me and asked me to write this. It's not intended to be super thorough and in-depth. And there are many great books out there. Sam Ladner has a great book. Jay Hasbrook has a great book that really get into more detail. This is much more introductory, and it's to expose people, to make people aware of the great things that anthropology can do in a variety of different areas.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned a few books there, and, you know, you mentioned a few great ones, and you also have a few great ones in your past. So how does, you know, I know you say this is introductory, but there is also, you know, there was an introductory text, Business Anthropology by Ann Jordan, which, you know, was a great book. Certainly, in fact, it's the book that I read that really kind of got me introduced and brought me to UNT, University of North Texas. But so you, in a sense, you know, you have sort of a new version of that. And so, you know, how's this as an introductory text maybe differ from like what existed in the past?
Well, that's great. And Ann Jordan taught UNT as well. She's a great anthropologist, and I really respect her work. And that was a very foundational book. I used to teach with that as well, Business Anthropology. And that was, I think she wrote that in 2003 and then had her revision in 2012. But where it was kind of lacking is where anthropologists are going now, especially the rise in social media, all that is being taken on with this and digital and big data and how anthropologists are working in a number of areas. You know, I really wanted to bring that in. It's just so interesting in social media. You have all these different communities that, you know, Facebook is about people who join to look into family and friends and so forth and share that information. And, you know, Instagram is very visual, so it's a very visually oriented. You draw people into the pictures and stories that you can share with that. And then you have like TikTok, which is just entertainment. It doesn't try to build communities. So each one of these networks has their own kind of each application has their own kind of system of rules and community that they form around. And I thought that's, you know, anthropologists are studying that. Great example. It was, I think, one of the most cited articles in American Anthropologist is when in 2020, when we were in the midst of COVID and the whole study of emojis, what do emojis mean? And then Facebook came up with the caring emoji. And that article, you know, what does caring mean when we're using social distance, when we can't be together? How does an emoji of caring kind of express that? Really interesting stuff that anthropologists can study and get behind. So I think, you know, all that it's changed since Ann Jordan's book is that, you know, we're open up to many more areas where business anthropologists are working and can apply their theories and their work.
Yeah. And so, you know, that really speaks to like a debate in some sense within business anthropology of like, what are the, you know, what are the subfields or what are the applications? And so how, you know, while I know there are some who think design is in and it's out, you know, what did you choose to include? You know, what are you defining as, you know, what business anthropology encompasses?
Oh, boy. And I, there's even a debate of what is business anthropology, you know, because, you know, Brian Moran, great scholar, I respect him. There's, you know, in and of and with anthropology and business, you know, how we can examine the ways anthropologists are working in industry, of industry, for industry, so forth, and even the range of what anthropologists do. And I really don't want to get into those kind of debates and arguments, but I kind of broadly talk about where anthropologists are, such as in, you know, user experience and design, where they're helping out, and they really are making differences here, you know, in crafting the box that Apple uses when you're opening the phone, how that's designed to, with that slow slide sucking sound that is an experience of anticipation that everyone who gets a new iPhone when they're opening that has that great experience. That's a great design feature that kind of plays into that. So marketing, consumer research, organizational work. It's impressive how anthropologists are really big in organizational work. I like the work that I've cited in my book, the organizational work, Elizabeth Bridey, of course, but the culture puzzle that Greg Urban, Derek Newberry, and Mario Musa did looked at the idea, and I know anthropologists don't like this word tribes, but it just resonates with people so well. How in business, you know, you have your tribal communities within, and so, you know, what is corporate culture? They really examine that. Every company needs its corporate identity, its corporate culture, and these tribes that form around that. I mean, these are things that anthropologists reveal, you know, power structures, power flows that are happening that prevent companies from succeeding. So that area, then also anthropologists working like you in the AI space, you know, that's really amazing. AI, digital analysis and so forth, where anthropologists are working in social media. Your work with Art Matcher is really, really great. You know, that is amazing how you have an anthropologist working to level the playing field, giving people that wouldn't have access to artwork, giving them access through your understanding of the algorithms that invite people in. And that I think Kate Crawford wrote something on that too, you know, the white man's dilemma, how algorithms often are designed by groups of people that have an implicit bias to them. We're not even aware of these biases that recognize certain things and not recognize other things. Well, this is where anthropologists don't just critique what's going on with AI and big data. They can actually get involved and write code for this and make a difference. And I think that's really critical. These are the areas I've talked about in my book. And again, they kind of gloss over. I'm sure there are far more areas, anthropologists working in medicine, anthropologists working in all kinds of areas. But I wanted to give a sense in the book of the breadth of places that anthropology does apply its theory and practice.
And, you know, that's a good jumping off point because, well, and so thank you for including my work in there. I was deeply honored, really, to be included.
It's good work.
Well, thank you. And, you know, but it brings up, you know, it does bring up an interesting point, which is especially like in the digital space and AI, you know, there is today a bit of, you know, there's an increasing amount of literature. But there's also not a lot of literature that is very detailed because so much of it is behind NDAs. And so, you know, everything we can do to make it more visible and provide more examples, I think, helps everybody. But part of where I'm going with that is like, you know, you do strive to make this all practical in the sense that whether it's talking about theory or method, you know, you are clearly through the book trying to make it so that others can use this as a template. And so can you talk a little bit about like what you tried to do there to make some of, you know, some of the theory and methods of these different subdisciplines a little bit more, you know, practical and useful?
Yeah. And I just wrote a blog on that for Elizabeth's career readiness, how we use combined theory with practice, and actually came up a new model for gelatin shaving. And this is something that you could look at. I'll just go over that quickly. You know, the Art of Shaving is a high-end shaving brand, and it defies, this is a project we did for Gillette, defies all the work that Gillette has, that men typically hate shaving it. They do it to get it over with. And so what Gillette does is make all the agency of shaving into the blades themselves. They pivot, they turn, they're warm, they do all the work for you so you don't have to, in other words. That was the message that they had. They try to make them as inexpensive as possible following Dollar Shave Club and some of these others. But then we found a group of men that really enjoyed shaving and were willing to spend many times more money to buy these products like the Art of Shaving. So what was going on there? And when we visited them, you know, we realized this is really where it's not just observations, but theory that comes in to help. These men were they were professionals, you know, they were bankers, they were lawyers, they were high service technician that were client facing. So the sense of appearance is really important to them. And appearance and performance is really critical to them, how they performed every day. So we'd pick up on this, on their cues of how they talk about things. You know, it's casual Friday, every guy goes in with jeans and shirts, but I'm not going to do that. I always dress up because the older partners like it when you're dressed up. This is a young lawyer talking. So the idea of performance came in, and we had them perform shaving to their colleagues that they invited, who they were trying to convince to use the shave product. And when you get into performance, you know, it's results matter. There's a sense of how you're doing things that really, really counts. So they're willing to spend more for this. And that changed our way of, we looked at this as a ritual process. It was very transformative how they came out the other end as fresher men. They said, ready for the day. It was very sensorial. They talked about the senses waking them up, the sound of the shaver when it goes over the skin, how it should be a right sound. Very sensorial. So they're in the moment. They're very sensual. And this is where theory helped or develop a sensual experiential model for performance that helped Gillette then come up with the perfect shave was one of their ideas. This is Gillette, you know, I will not rush that which enhances my appearance was one of the taglines we had. So theory plays into practice and was very successful both for Gillette and for teaching. You can teach rituals as symbolic from an anthropological point of view, you know, where they carry meaning, or you can look at rituals as transformative and how they're experiential, how they perform. Tim Ingold talks about that imminent intentionality, that you're in the experience. And so, you know, what is that experience like and how you can bring in slight changes to increase that experience? Those are things that I think theory really helps then with practice. You can either teach this and you can then report this in your findings to clients as well.
You know, I think those kind of examples that you include, again, really help make it a useful tool, especially for non-anthropologists. And that brings me to like another point. You know, somewhere in doing so, right, you are kind of doing like an almost like an act of public anthropology. And I think you might even use the word public anthropology somewhere in the beginning. But you, if you don't use that exact phrasing, you at least speak to the need to thrust ourselves into the public conversation more. And I'd be curious to dig into that a little bit more, because as we see, you know, there is, Laura Karcheva and I talk about this in our book that just came out, M-Tech Anthropology, where we're, the introduction, we spend a fair amount of time talking about the pressures that anthropology is under, politicians cutting budgets, you know, libraries being threatened to close, whole academic programs, anthropology programs closing. In other places, I've talked about how we're not present in the media very frequently, although you've been on TV to talk about gift giving for Valentine's Day. But we're not often present in as talking heads and other such things. And so can you speak to a little bit more about your perspective on, like, say, public anthropology and what it is that we should be doing to thrust ourselves into the public conversation around critical social issues?
Absolutely. Happy to do that. So I like examples in the book. I love Stronza's work of ecotourism in the Amazon. That actually got picked up a lot by New York Times, National Geographic, The Economist, where she went down to do her dissertation work in working with an Amazonian community. And she was saying, how can business work together with conservation? How can these two, they seem like opposite forces. They can't possibly work together. But she empowered the local people. She gave them cameras, so they were helping her record data. She worked with the company. I forget the name of the tour company, but they had areas that, they were off land, and where they could visit, they actually helped build in with the communities, how they could visit with them. They helped build a lodge for them for people to visit, but prohibited hunting and logging, protecting the land. So it was really a great example of win-win. And that's just great public it got a lot of attention, and it should. Those are great examples where anthropologists can come in as culture brokers and so forth. I like that one. I also want to point out, anthropologists are cautious about getting in there and doing things. The whole, do no harm of the AAA came about partly because of, what was it, Chagnon's work with the Yanomamo in Amazonia too, where he, supposedly brought in some diseases and so forth. And then you take an article like, I like Ferryman's article on data as a gift. And what a different perspective if, instead of extracting information about the Yanomami and what their blood type is and how scientists are observing them, what if you share that information back with them? And that's her whole point, that data can be used as a gift. This would also have a good public presence too. And you can talk about, disease prevention, bring this back to the community. So anthropological ways of, connecting with communities using data as a gift, for instance, would eliminate a lot of this bad press stuff and go back and work with and help communities. So I think, there's so much that anthropology can do when we look at the ways we approach problems, that it can be used for helpful. And then making that public can just bring people in and, join the conversation. And people then see the value of anthropological programs, hopefully, and anthropological teaching. That would be one of my goals in a lot of this.
Good. And, so if we were to tie some of these threads together, and I know we've sort of touched on this already, but what would you see as the most, what excites you the most about our future as business anthropologists after having written, done the research and written the book?
I think, we're anthropology, the value of doing ethnographic work is still there, but I think a lot of the stuff you're doing too is really exciting, how you can combine data analytics, AI, machine learning, combine that with ethnographic work. That can be impressive. Anders Munk, his work, I love his stuff that he's been doing, he did a study on the Nordic cuisine, and he used both data analysis and good old-fashioned ethnography for that. And data analysis was, you know, he did searches on data from food sources, tourist information, and he saw that there was all this promotion about, you know, the great Nordic cuisine and you had the great restaurants there and so forth. But then he went to local farmers and they weren't even aware of this. You know, he did ethnographic work with them. So it's kind of like combining these two stories together, that one was a story to build up hype, but then there was a story of the local people, you know, just making a living out of how they use their, you know, fishing and farming and resources and so forth. He really helped kind of build together a sense of understanding of these differences and create dialogue between people. And I think that's really where anthropology can go is, you know, again, continuing to keep our techniques, our methods of ethnographic work and emic understandings and so forth, reflexivity, looking at biases and so forth, looking at holism, and then combining this with data analysis to come up with both this large point of view and then a really focused point of view. I think that's really an exciting future for where anthropology is going.
And so, you know, a few times you mentioned sensory anthropology and work in that space, like say the apple, you know, essentially when you're pulling the apple box apart and that experience. And I know you always are also doing interesting work in that space. So you mind sharing a little bit about that just since it came up a few times?
Sure. So I'm just finishing a chapter in a book. It's a marketing book. It's on consumer rituals. And again, I look at the baby bath ritual and Johnson & Johnson and how, well, it's actually Johnson's, and how the communication between mother and baby in the bath is highly sensorial, and it becomes an experiential sensorial event for the baby. But we took this one key benefit that Johnson's has, the scent. Johnson's was seen as an old brand. It wasn't as modern as some of the newer brands when we were pitching this. And Aveeno and Mustela are other brands that are much more modern, contemporary. But we took the idea of the scent and then linked it to all the sensory experience that a mother has with a baby, the touching, the playing, the bath, the dialogue that goes on, creating this sense of harmony in the bath that a baby and a mother have. There's a synergy that have, and mothers connect with their baby in the bath time. They look forward to it. It's a time of talking, of interchange. Mothers often sing songs. And we heard things in the discussions like, I didn't give my baby a bath, we had a bath. So it was transformative for both. And as mothers would say, it was as much for them as it was for the baby. It wasn't just the baby was clean, a functional benefit. It was this experiential benefit, a sensory benefit. They come out feeling more fresh and alive and, you know, just feeling great, as well as the baby as well. So those kind of that experience, we could then tap back into Johnson's and then really revive an old brand, take an old brand that was known for, you know, just scent and make it more of a whole sensory experience. And that's something that I think my interest in the senses is that how senses can, you know, enliven, be transformative, create a greater sense of awareness. And that's, I think, very beneficial for brands when they can be part of that. They can be very transformative.
Well, so whether somebody wants to find the new book, you know, or any of your other work, where's the best place that they can be looking for all your work?
I mean, you can go to Amazon, look for the book, but actually this book is cheaper if you go to the Routledge website. They are having a sale, I think, even right now. So it's priced very well, $18, I think, you know, something like that. So, I'm hoping, again, not just for anthropologists who are very experienced, but people who are teaching, who are in other classes in marketing and communication and media studies. I'm hoping this book will be something that brings an awareness and appreciation of anthropology and how it is just useful and really drive an excitement around anthropology, the use of it, how valuable it is for making change, for creating intervention.
Good. And if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, is there any place that they should look?
contact me through emails, you know, either Fordham, tmalafite at fordham.edu or timothy.malafite at gmail. Either is fine.
Well, Tim, thanks for coming on. Appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you very much, Matt. It's great to speak with you.
Thank you for listening to the Anthropology in Business podcast. To learn everything you need to break into business anthropology and why business anthropology is one of the best lenses for contributing to business success, visit my website at mattarts.me, where I cover many topics related to business anthropology and beyond. There you will find all the podcast episodes, blogs, and news. Please like, share, and subscribe. See you next time.